Hey, let's start. Gabe, introduce us.
All right, after a long wait, 16 minutes late, we've got we're here with Brian and Gabe live. So Brian Jacker joins us in San Francisco, and I'm here in Omaha, where it feels like it's San Francisco out today. It's absolutely gorgeous here, which is not normal for August. Normally it's 105, but today it's 75. So it's good to finally be on the air. You guys can hear me all right?
We can hear you all right here in San Francisco.
Awesome.
I don't know if here's
so
ask
the complicated satellite feed hookup over the internet is finally done. We wanted to have the show, and there's 20 people in the chat room right now that apparently wanted to hear us talk about it, because both Brian and I spent a little bit of time messing around with Windows 8 lately, we have thoughts.
Yeah,
to put it kindly.
Mine, first of all, I guess my experience with Windows 8, I'm using it on a laptop without a touchscreen. And
same for me.
Obviously I'm sort of, you know, my bias is sort of anti-Microsoft as they're, you know, tied to their asinine licensing policies. So I'm just sort of bitter at them in general. So I'm definitely judging them more harshly. But it's funny because even during the setup, when they say, like, in the setup, it says, name your computer anything you want. It literally says, name your, you know, pick a name for your computer, name it anything you want. So I try to type, you know, Brian's Windows 8 computer. So I type BRIAN'. And it says, you can't use apostrophes. And it literally, I got a screenshot of this saying, you can't use apostrophes directly under the text that says, name your computer anything you want. So what they mean is anything you want without special characters or spaces.
At least it told you that, though. Hey, your phone's on vibrate.
It's the old Henry Ford thing.
Well, So you tried to caveat what you just said by saying you're using this on a laptop without a touchscreen and things like that. And like, I don't think that we need to justify the fact that we're using laptops without touchscreens. I mean, desktops and laptops without touchscreens is what, like 99.99% of the devices that Windows 8 is going to be used on in the enterprise. I mean, we don't have Surface tablets yet. So even if they're out at launch, they still aren't going to be deployed. So if Microsoft intends Windows 8 to be an enterprise solution, this is the enterprise desktop. Like this is the device that this is going to be or intended to be used on, at least in the enterprise.
Yeah, I was surprised that it has that Metro. Like I didn't realize it had that Metro screen. I thought that was just like for touch people, right? So I was really shocked when I booted up and it boots me right into that Metro home screen and like starts telling me the weather in Mumbai. Like what the fuck? It doesn't know where I am. Is that Bing locations?
Well, and so I mean, I posted something on Twitter like I can't believe this god awful thing is the first thing that people see, and I mean it's pretty, I guess, but I don't even know if I get how this would be used as a consumer. I get maybe how it would work well on a smartphone, but trying to make this thing go to the desktop to me. This is like Apple trying to shoehorn Launchpad into the OS X. Like, that's just asinine. I mean, nobody uses that, at least nobody that I know of. Because what user, what business user is going to sit down in front of this and then just stare at all these active tiles? Ego Geek says he's already used to the new start menu.
Start menu? Wait, what new start menu?
Well, this I guess is the start menu. I mean, it doesn't exist. If you hit that start menu button on your laptop, you know, it just brings up the start screen with all the tiles.
And I'm still not clear on how you find your applications on that screen.
So search, apparently this is leveraging search or relies upon search an awful lot. And to bring up the search, you have to like mouse into the upper right corner and then find search, and then you can type in whatever you want. And I'm sure there's keyboard shortcuts for that and things. But there is, like, if you go to search, there's applications and settings, files, things like that. So it's very heavily search focused. But I don't know. I'm used to having all that information right in front of me. It's a different use case from that of a tablet or a phone. Like, this is a desktop. This is, and by that I mean like the actual physical thing.
Well, the best. So if you use I got running in a VM on a Mac, and you know Fusion has that. Oh, I forget what they call it, but. You know,
Fusion's like, what the hell is this?
They put the icon In your, what's the Mac version of the system tray called? You know, they put the icon in there for Fusion.
Up in the dock.
In the upper right, not the dock, the one in the upper right corner by the clock.
You know? Oh, yeah, up there, okay.
And then when you click on that, it shows the start menu of all your VMs that are running. So I did find a start menu in Windows 8. It's called click on the Fusion icon up in your corner, and then you see down on that list, like you see, you know, Office and like all the apps you installed, you see them right there. So my start menu for Windows 8 is
Fusion.
Yeah.
Well, so Bill in the chat room says, if you right click on the start screen somewhere and then select all apps down in the lower right corner, that'll show you all the applications you have. And that is not like, okay. I recall from my days as a desktop support guy and from conversations that I still have with good friends of mine that are, people don't remember the right click. So I don't believe, SOL if you don't have Fusion. I don't believe that the right click is a viable thing. And also, how the hell do you do that on a phone or a tablet? Is there like a button you hold down while you tap to get a right click to come up?
This goes back to it. And like, obviously, when interfaces are different, people who are old are going to bitch about it. And Gabe and I are now old. So,
and I'm trying to look at it with a different light, right? Because I realize that I'm just crotchety at this point, right? Yeah. And I'm just bitter at the fact that somebody tried to change what I've been doing for 20 years. Like, this is big.
Well,
I mean, so you can't even boot this thing directly to the desktop. Did you know that?
I did not know that. But the desktop mode, so I thought Metro was just like a pain, you know, this new desktop and we could get rid of it or whatever. And I'm sure there's a registry key you can use to disable it or something. But what was crazy is even when you go into the desktop mode, that has no start menu. Like I knew the Metro had no start button, but I was surprised that the desktop itself, even when you're in the full desktop mode, and it's kind of funny because you notice like the taskbar items do not go all the way to the left. Like there's literally like a 60 pixel blank zone on the left of the taskbar where they removed the start button and then didn't even reprogram the app windows to slide over there.
I mean, well, there's a look and feel element to this too, and I realize that this is just rapid fire bitching at this point. But I mean, what else was it going to be really? The whole look and feel aspect doesn't feel, I mean, we're using the RTM version, but it doesn't feel it. It feels like a beta version still, like for reasons like you mentioned, you know, that the icon is just kind of it's not even the same distance away from the side of the screen as the clock is over on the other side, you know?
Well, so the only thing I guess is, so to me, like I said, I want to be careful not to bitch about user interface changes that are just for my crotchetiness, but I just don't understand. Because did you notice that they tell you to tap everywhere instead of click? Like it says all throughout the UI and like all the text, the instructions and like tap here to continue and all this kind of stuff. So the thing that's crazy to me is how, again, if I had this thing on a touch-based, you know, tablet, then it would all sort of make sense. But I just don't understand how they're sort of forcefully, you know, shoving that touch-based interface onto devices with that don't have touch. And right. So that to me is the one thing, like, If Metro turned on for touch and classic desktop stayed on for everyone else, I would have zero complaints. It's purely the fact they're shoving Metro down the throat and they're changing all the words to say tap here, and it's just like the interface is just horrible for a mouse. And yet, I mean, how many Windows-capable computers in the world are there that do not have touch? I guess about 98% of them.
Right, and I would say that it's also horrible even if you do have touch and you don't have a tablet, because if you're running on a laptop or a desktop, you don't want to be reaching your arm up, tapping the screen. I mean, we've had this conversation about how ridiculous that is in terms of remoting Windows applications to iPads and to touchscreen desktops, because we feel like, you know, oh man, this would be so cool if my monitor was touchified or something like that. And the fact of the matter is that we don't want to be doing that, or we don't want to have our Motorola Atrix phone with our, you know, and be tapping the screen or whatever to drive these applications, because they're not tappable. And so this just kind of exemplifies that. And honestly, I never considered that it would be mouse unfriendly. I always figured this would be there, but you could also use a mouse, no problem. It would be intuitive for both. And I feel like they just said, nah, screw it. We're just going to go with touch.
Incidentally, did you try also? So I was playing with the browser, and it's got, by the way, like there's no way. I mean, Microsoft, you know, I was reading an article today about SharePoint 2013, I think they're calling it. And they were talking about how, you know, a new version of SharePoint comes out every 3 years. And that was just in the setup of the article. It's like, hey, everyone, new version. It's that third year, time for new SharePoint again. And I'm like, wow, how sort of anachronistic is that? Like, new version of software every 3 years? That's so crazy. And then I was thinking the same thing is true with IE10. I mean, like, Firefox and Chrome are coming out with new versions of their browsers every 6 weeks and adding more and more features continuously. And they're very sort of like, you know, nimble yeah. and able to react. And then, you know, Microsoft is making software like every 3 years. And I don't know, maybe once everything goes to Metro and the Windows Store, then it's going to sort of change. But it's the same, like with IE10, like I was trying to use IE10. And, you know, it's supposed to be all standards compliant and everything. And I know it doesn't take plugins on the Metro side. And so I went to brianmadden.com and tried to watch a video, but it detected that it had, our Brian Madden video player plays video in H.264 natively, and it works fine on iPad, so it doesn't have Flash. But this thing, I got a little error that says, you need Flash, like Flash not installed, click here to install Flash. Like, that was a little thing that was embedded in the Brian Madden website. And then I clicked on the link to install Flash, and the Adobe website's like, hey, you have IE10, Flash is built in. And the website wouldn't detect, so that wouldn't install, but I couldn't actually run Flash content. And this is funny because it's like this is out of the box setup, you know? Like, I don't think this is me screwing something up. Like, I got the bits, I clicked.
And maybe
next,
we have
next.
It a little bit early since it's RTM, but you would think that stuff would be there. But I went looking for Media Center, and that's not there. And Media Center is going to be an add-on that you have to buy, but it's not ready in the store yet. So I feel like maybe RTM is maybe still a little too soon for all that. Like, they still have to work the kinks out. I don't know. I'm surprised that that's the case. But the browser. Which browser? The one in the Metro or the one on the desktop? Yeah. And so, but using the one in Metro, I as a user, right? And again, I'm thinking of this not as a consumer, but as a business user. I don't want to have two different browsers to. I want it to be the same experience, right? I want it to be the thing that I know. I don't. Have you tried to use it like to get tabs?
Yeah, well, it's made for touch.
Or how do you close it?
I don't need a 30-point tall URL bar on my fucking laptop, and right. So it should know. Like, I on a tablet, okay, maybe it's going to slide out of the way and all that kind of stuff. But I don't need it when I slide up to it. Like, I turn this thing on, I log in, it's got a button that says internet, I push the internet button, I type in brianmadden.com, and it's like I'm typing into a billboard. And this is on my laptop.
To be honest, I can't even bring up the address or the URL bar. Right,
I know now. The browser in the Metro is made for touch, but the problem is I have a laptop. I installed Windows 8 on my laptop, native, just clicked, installed it, next, and I turn it on, and I'm presented with Metro. And that thing knows I don't have a touch screen. I'm presented with Metro, and there's a button like big and center that says internet. I push that internet button. And so, yeah, we like data nerds can be like, well, that one is made for touch. But I don't have touch. And that's the button that says internet. And so that me and 99% right. of
and
people.
And it's 2012 and the system should know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I know it's made for touch, but like Microsoft should know it's made. For, yeah.
The biggest problem to me, though, is that, like, underlying, this is still Windows. And maybe not. Maybe IE in Metro is not running in Windows and not consuming resources the same way. And maybe it's treated as almost a separate OS. But, like, I can't close IE, right? Like, when I try to get out of it, there's no closing it. There's just going back to the start page. And I realize that that's the same behavior that we have with Android and iOS. But in my mind, this is still Windows in the background. And that means that thing's probably consuming resources somewhere. Now, so we need to dig in and like resource kit this thing and try to figure out, you know, exactly how the hell this thing works and how Metro plays into all of that. But like, again, from a business standpoint, so anybody out in the chat room, or I don't know, maybe you didn't, is there any difference with the enterprise version of this? Like, maybe the enterprise version has all these things that we're bitching about and we're just doing the wrong thing.
I looked on the enterprise, so I downloaded the professional, and then, because like, remember professional bits came out like a day before enterprise, and then I looked to see if I should download the enterprise bits and use that instead. And it looked like enterprise only comes with those extra things. Like, it has the extra things like, you know, like the virus. I don't know. You got a sandbag over there, Jack. Can you reach that?
No, it's the same. All right. So Anon9304 says Alt F4 closes the app. That's fine. But Alt F4.
Oh, which one's the Alt button on my tablet? No.
Right. But I mean, we know that as IT guys, but man, like,
That's true, right? No, Ma, you got to do Alt F4.
Yeah, dumbass.
But whatever. But I guess my mom doesn't need to know how to close an app. So the thing is, okay, fine. So like, that's enough of that. But for Microsoft, like, I still can't understand, and this is something that I've not been able to have answered. Can I help you, Jack?
No, I'm good.
We got a little comedy situation happening over here with his microphone and sandbags and chairs and stuff.
Do you know how you add a tab, by the way, in Metro IE?
No.
You right click.
Well, yeah.
Because there's one of those. Yeah.
So what? Hang on a second. Rotate that so that other leg is opposite. Yeah.
Justin's going to come back and demand a raise.
To developers out there, what are, like, I don't get what, like, why would anyone write? So at this point, why would you write an app for Metro? Like, because I feel like, you know, so Microsoft, so, like, what I don't understand is so someone told me that this past week, and he, you know, I'd like to give credit, but this particular person indicated that he would not like to be attribution with this. That, you know, Microsoft is trying to close a platform that became popular because it was open. And so the whole ecosystem of Windows sort of has succeeded because it was so open and people could basically write any software that does anything. And now now that, you know, Apple and iOS, the mobile and Android have shown that there's value in this closed ecosystem, you know, they're trying to make it more like that. But it's this weird sort of amalgamation now because, you know, like, I don't understand, like, if I'm a Windows developer and I've written all the, you know, for 20 years Windows apps and they're working on Windows and all that kind of stuff, like, what incentive do I have to write new apps for Metro? It's going to be this closed Microsoft only system that, I guess that's why they're forcing Metro on everyone, because in order for people to use Metro, they have to have, you know, like, the install base of like hundreds of millions of users. And, you know, they're only going to sell like 5 million tablets, so that's not enough to incent people to write Metro apps. So I guess they have to do it and say, oh, your Metro apps now are going to work everywhere. Although they're going to have the same thing on Android problem, like write once, test everywhere, because now, so if you're writing an app for Metro, and you have no limits to the numbers of devices, whether they have screens or keyboards or touch or mouse, whether they're big, whether they're small, whether they're anything. So it's not like you're just writing one application one time and just letting it run. Like, you'll have to still have to, I don't know. I just can't.
In that situation, as a developer, as a company looking to put out a product, aren't you going, screw it, HTML5?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I can't, that's been, maybe you and I have talked about this before. I think it's in one of my presentations that I give too. It's just, you know, with all of these different things, you've got to maintain an Android version, iOS version, a Windows mobile version, or Windows 8 version, Metro version, whatever the case may be. I mean, all of a sudden, you went from developing one in-house app that ran on Windows, and now you've got to develop 5 in-house applications because they're all separate and there's no similar. I mean, you can have, you know, I'm sure there's somewhere some commonality across the boards at some super low level, but building and supporting 5 applications now or 4 applications. And I just can't imagine. I can't imagine one more platform helping that situation.
Yeah. So the dude says, try video editing in HTML5. Okay. Try video editing in Metro.
Yeah, everything has a niche use case.
But I mean, you're not writing a video. You're not writing a video editing app for Metro either. You know. So
right, because you're gonna have to touch it.
Yeah, I mean, like, right, and who's gonna touch, like, video editors? They use dual screens with 19x1200 resolution and all this kind of stuff. I mean, that's not a Metro app.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and there's niche use cases for everything. I mean, you know, obviously we Justin and I specifically have laptops because we specifically need them for things like Adobe Premiere and things like that. And that way, like, he does most of the video editing, but in a pinch, I can do it as well. But you, on the other hand, you could get away with a Chromebook probably for 90% of your job. And so, you know, you're probably better equipped to adopt some sort of a more agnostic platform. Whereas we're niche cases though. You know, we have to have something with more horsepower. And so there's always going to be those niche cases like videoing or applications like OnLive. We should talk about them too. But, there's always going to be those niche use cases.
I just can't see how much. All right, let's put this Metro thing to bed. But, like, I'm just not a fan. And I understand how they got Touchify stuff. I can't understand the Surface tablet. People are so gaga over this thing. And to me, it just seems like the worst of both worlds, not the best of both worlds. And I
said Windows. Microsoft really needed to knock Windows 8 out of the park if they wanted to keep Windows on the business desktop relevant beyond Windows 7. And I don't think they did it here.
No, there's zero chance of people, I mean, businesses going to Windows 8, why would anyone do that? Windows 7 is good until 2020.
I don't know how many people you've asked this. I've asked a few hundred people if anybody has plans to go to Windows 8, and not a single person has any plans at all beyond just installing it on their own PC and then, you know, just getting a feel for it.
Yeah, they'll learn how to use it because their mom's computer will come with it. But other than that.
Right.
So it's, yeah, this Metro, I don't know. I'm just not a fan. I'm just so sick of everything that comes out of Microsoft now.
So the fact that you can't trick it. So in the tech preview or the beta of Windows 8, there was actually a shortcut that you could throw somewhere that would actually get the desktop to launch at startup rather than the start menu Metro thing. They actually blocked that for the RTM. And I posted that link in the chat room a little while ago. I can do it again, actually. It's probably still my clipboard. But they actually blocked the ability to do that shortcut and are essentially forcing you to start in Metro. I just can't imagine giving that to my users and being like, here's your new computer. Good luck. And then having this
thing
appear.
Like I said, it's not even that.
Yeah.
I'm being
live data
here.
And it's the panels.
Not even like the fact that it's different. I'm fine with different. But the fact that it's made for touch.
Not usable.
For not touch. So, okay, let's put that to bed. Hey, by the way, you know, speaking of all these things in Metro and touching, it's funny that Apple is now the, you know, most valuable company sort of in history.
Ever.
Although if you look at GDP, like Microsoft's share was bigger. I think they said Microsoft in its heyday in 99 would have been the equivalent of like $850 billion market cap today.
Sure. Is that number that they give for Microsoft in 99, is that adjusted for inflation or is that the actual?
No, that was inflation. Yeah. So their market. So Apple recently surpassed what the actual number for Microsoft was. But if you adjust Microsoft for inflation, it was bigger.
That's what I mean though. That 600 and whatever $18 billion
that was the actual
valuation of Microsoft. That's the actual number, not adjusted. So yeah, all right. So I mean, inflation. No matter what, somebody was going to overtake Microsoft at some point, just based on inflation anyway.
Right.
So
yeah,
it's great, but not like.
But so here's what's funny to me though: living in San Francisco, where everyone uses all these Apple products and loves, you know, the whole like think different thing, and it's funny how people in San Francisco are so anti. Like establishment, big business, you know, all this kind of stuff.
And now Apple is.
And every hipster running around with all their eye, like they got, you know, everyone in the city owns like 6 Apple products, myself included, and thinking it's all like alternative. It's like Smells Like Teen Spirit. You know, remember that song, Jack? Like this is.
Right.
No,
he doesn't.
Yeah. Everyone, the whole point of the song is everyone is, it's like all the young rebels, like we're all here, you know, like it's all the young rebels rebelling, but they're all rebelling together. It's a mass group, you know, in the exact same way. So it's like this kind of thing. It just seemed a little bit funny that they, you know, that all these people with these Apple products and like loving how awesome they are. And it's like the biggest company in the world, in the history of the world.
Compliance in their non-compliance.
Although there's one Chinese company.
In their non-compliance. That's what it is.
Yeah. The article mentioned there's one Chinese company who claims to have a market cap of like over $1 trillion, but that's like on the Chinese stock market, which doesn't really have like regular accounting rules. And on the overseas, all the overseas market where they also trade are like, they're worth way less. So it's kind of funny. Like I'm sure that some North Korean company is going to come out and say like the people's, you know, loving Tobacco Company or whatever is actually has a market cap of like $14 quadrillion.
That's funny. Korean dollars.
So what else do we got?
So how about the OnLive thing? Have you followed this at all?
I was on vacation. So like, what's the story there?
So over the weekend, there were posts and stuff. I actually first saw it on Mac Rumors, actually on like Saturday afternoon or something. But there were some rumors breaking that everybody had been let go from OnLive. And it even had some mentions of, you know, they could drive by their offices in PA and Palo Alto and see people with boxes and stuff just stacked up as people were leaving. Turns out, initially those rumors were denied that the rumor was that OnLive was going out of business. And that is the specific thing that is disputed, is that OnLive is still in business, but they fired all their people. What ended up happening was OnLive just, they were way too big for their britches, so to speak. They bought way too much. They had way too much infrastructure, way too much operating costs, and they could not raise enough funding to maintain that. And so in a conference call, as I read online, I'm not making this stuff up, that they Steve Perlman, the CEO that Jack and I met with, he called everybody and said, look, we just can't keep this up. We gotta shut down. There actually is an investor. I can't remember his name, but it was one of the original investors in OnLive, has now assumed all of OnLive and has hired back some of the people. But as it stands right now, there's even Steve Perlman isn't even the CEO anymore, although he still is there as an advisor and might come back as a CEO. From our standpoint, OnLive continues in the same way they were, last week, at least for the time being. So they still have the games. They still have the desktops as a service solution, but they are a much smaller company than they were before.
And the desktops as a service did not manage to take care of their overbuilding problem by suddenly selling everybody their desktops.
So what's interesting is that in one of the articles mentioned that it was a quote actually from Perlman, was that they had something on the order of 8,000 servers to support 1,600 customers, or 1,600 concurrent, I guess I should say, which, talk about overbuilding and overspending. I think that it appears that they thought their solution was going to be a bigger hit than it was. And so they scaled up rapidly and then couldn't, bring in enough revenue or funding to support all of that while it ramped up. So I don't know. I'm trying to bring up my Twitter where I had some other comments, but it's being uncooperative at the moment. But there's a lot of, there was concern right from the gaming community. Again, remember when they got in trouble with Microsoft and the gamers were like, no, OnLive wouldn't do that. So there were a few of those people as well, but I guess as long as it's still up and going, the gamers don't care. I don't know what's going to happen with the DAS solution. It was kind of a, that actually might symbolize what happened with OnLive, right? Where they just went and did it without actually looking at the ramifications of what they were actually doing with the licensing and all of that, trying to do Windows 7 desktops and so on without doing SA or VDA or without having to comply with licensing. And I feel like this whole mess is probably along that same mentality where we have this great technology. Let's just go and hope that it catches up to us on the backside. And it didn't.
That's what the bubble was originally. And yeah, the Facebook bubble, all these things. I just posted a link from BBC, which was sent to me by John Moody, and talking about sort of British Telecom, HTC, a bunch of people invested. I didn't realize OnLive had all these investors and like legit companies. And they were talking about how, like this article basically talks about how it's very likely that these companies are going to have to sort of write down their stake in this. So, it's. I don't know.
It's a shame to see that, especially where people losing their jobs and things like that. That was honestly, I'm thinking, I'm like, man, I feel bad, especially because it just seems like that sort of rapid growth without the actual revenue coming in. It just seems so irresponsible is the word that comes to mind, although that's a really harsh,
What, for the commentary. Company or for the,
not just, the employees? Well, for the company, just because that's such that rapid growth that they bought 6,000 more devices than they needed to have.
But it's not their money. So what's he care? That's the brilliance of venture capital.
But it's not sustainable.
Well, sure, but it's not Steve Perlman's fault. That dude's brilliant. It's
I'm not saying it's his fault. I'm saying he probably doesn't get to come back as CEO.
Well, sure, not there. But he doesn't need to. He already built one company and sold it to Microsoft. He built this one didn't work. He's going to build a third company. And there's going to be, it's these dumbass investors. So, all these VC firms that are looking at, their multi-100%, they got to get like 3x return and all this kind of stuff. And they're lining up to give this guy money. And that's the way it works out here,
So you get the money and then you have to grow it one way or another. Like they give you the money to spend. So,
yeah, but it's their money. So if he fails, great. So he's taking a few months off. He'll like think up his new idea. And I guarantee we'll have another interview with him in a couple of years on our website about his new startup. And whether it succeeds or not is irrelevant. Because it just has nothing like, your ability to succeed or not is immaterial when it comes to your ability to raise money. And so,
And it does look like that was his job, like to raise money. But then, but to scale out something like that in such an unsustainable way, like you could have stayed ahead of the curve without going completely balls out like that. is the only thought that I have. Because that's what happened with the desktop. The desktop as a service thing too, where they just went completely balls out and then screwed it up and had to dial it back. But they'd already, you know, it's already, they've sunk so much cost and time and everything into it. Whereas if it would have been planned out a little bit better, you know, it could have scaled up a little evenly.
Venture capitalists don't have an investment mode other than balls out.
Yeah.
So, and especially if you, I mean, look at AppSense, right? So they're, you know, they're growing along, like, probably how many employees more do they get per year? Like 10% growth per year for the past 15 years. And then they get, you know, $70 million from Goldman and a couple board seats, and these guys want to take them public. And now they go from 70 employees to, you know, like 400 employees inside of a year. And that would be what I would call balls out. And that's it. Because, like, these venture capitalists, like, if you're not going balls out, you know, it's that's their mode. That's their mode of operation.
Yeah. Well, all right. That at least explains that. I mean, you know, I not being around it as much as you, but still. So that's what's going on with OnLive.
Speaking of AppSense, so Harry, I was on vacation yesterday too. My parents were in town. Did I tell this, Gabe? So parents are visiting. Jack and I were kind of tag teaming back and forth on, like, entertaining them. I had yesterday. So we went down to Monterey and Santa Cruz and all that sort of stuff. But
it's a good trip. Did you eat at Taco Bell?
No, there's a Taco Bell in Pacifica. Gabe was referring to. It's literally on the beach.
the steel tables that sit outside that you can eat at are rusting from the salt water.
Yeah, and you sit there and watch people trying to surf with thick wetsuits and 2-foot waves,
and 8-degree water
in North California. Yeah. So Hair Labana is gone from AppSense.
Yeah, that just came across in a tweet yesterday saying that you know, today was his last day at AppSense, which surprised just about everybody. I mean, all the tweets were like, "Whoa, didn't see that coming," or "Good luck to you," or I believe Simon Crosby said something like, "I feel a disturbance in the force." so I you know, that and they're friends as I know it. So, you know, that was a surprise to him as well. So, AppSense released. I asked their PR person, you know, what's going on with Harry, and they said Harry chose to leave. And still has some shares in the company, but AppSense is on track for Data Now and all this other stuff. You know, it was the standard, you know, CTO has departed the company response, actually. So they are CTO-less at the moment. Keith Turnbull, who we know fairly well, is assuming that position for now until somebody else, until they can find someone else.
Oh, so anyone want to be CTO?
Yeah, there's a vacancy.
That sounds like a hard job. Well, it's Harry, so hopefully we can get him to blog for us now, because I always liked hearing him talk about his sort of vision for the industry. And he and I, you know, gave some sessions together, Brian Forum, in years past. And so I don't know.
He ever right, too? Because he said Windows 7 was the last Windows migration that people would do. And he's looking good on that prediction.
He doesn't have a personal blog, right? So now if he's, we should.
I think Twitter, Harry Labana, is the only way to follow
tell him.
Let's
get him over here to give him his bully pulpit, as it were.
Yeah, it does look like it was kind of abrupt. There was a tweet right before his one saying he was going to leave AppSense that he was, you know, just got back from vacation and found, you know, had to do a mountain of paperwork and things like that. And then a couple hours later it was, you know, I'm leaving. But so
maybe
I'm curious.
Mountain of paperwork signing.
Right. Yeah. If he was one paper, I don't know. So I'm curious to find out, you know, what that is. But I guess in the end it's irrelevant, and Harry's not at AppSense anymore. And, you know, there's an opening.
They're hiring. So we got VMworld next week here in San Francisco. I have done very little preparation for that apart from trying to ignore all this deluge of emails from PR people wanting us to set up meetings. And my only complaint about these types of events is that, you know, the PR people don't know or don't pay attention to what we do, like you and I and Jack. And so, you know, I don't know how many vendors are VMworld, like a few hundred, and they all have, you know, there's only a small percentage of them that are sort of play in our space that we are interested in. And the rest of them, it's like, come look at this way to, back up your cloud data logs from servers in vDirector or something. I'm like, what?
I thought you were reading from one. That sounds just like it.
I made that up, but that's, I mean, yeah.
But then they add one sentence at the beginning about, you know, due to the rise in BYOD, there's ever more demand for backing up your vServer data logs in the cloud.
Yeah, like to make it.
You can tell the go-getters.
Yeah.
Right. You can tell the guys that are just doing a mail merge or whatever from the spreadsheet they were sent, and then the guys that are, you know, the self starters. I had one guy that like copied and pasted a line from my bio on BrianMadden.com. Like, seeing as how you like to cut through the bullshit and get down to the practical uses or something, and it was just like a verbatim copy and paste from my bio, and I wanted to be like good job, guy.
But that
would get credit for trying.
But that would establish context. So that's
right. I still don't care about your cloud backup solution. It might be good, but like it's just not in our space.
So did you see that? I think one of the rumors is that VMware is going to announce the VRAM pricing model is dead, and they're going to go back to the CPU pricing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and that was the general world reaction. but it was weird though, because someone, like in the article that I read about that, someone had something about like people were gonna like, that's great, I have customers who are moving to Hyper-V because of this, and I'm like, really? They're moving to Hyper-V because of that? I don't think so. But regardless, maybe it'll prevent people from thinking about Hyper-V in the future.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? That's their main. You know, they have to compete with the buzz now being generated by Hyper-V. So, and I would imagine too, there's those the live migration without shared storage and things like that. Those features that Hyper-V had, I would imagine we'll see those, you know, announced next week as well. For VMware, if not production in beta, because that's the buzz that people have been like, oh, this is the VMware killer, and you know, it's not going to happen. I think I even wrote an article about that. But I'd have to find that. And Skype and Flash take a lot out of my system right now.
So VMworld, though, I don't know what, you know, obviously we'll be there. We'll watch the keynote. Who knows what we'll see on the sort of desktop side of things. I haven't really talked to them in a little while about what's happening in the desktop space. You know, we talked to, I guess even all the conversations we had with the VMware folks at Briform, we didn't really have much of a conversation on specific products and stuff.
And they're usually pretty tight. They keep their information pretty close to their vest here leading up to the show. But usually within a few days of the show, they start releasing things that they didn't tell any of us about. This is what happened last year with Octopus and AppBlast.
Yeah.
And so we're like, hey, did you see the blog post this morning? And it was like a day before the keynote even. And so it's weird. Like, you go to the keynote to get news. You're not really checking the blogs.
Well, that guy changed groups, so maybe there's no surprise announcements. We told him, hey man, if you tell us about this ahead of time, we'll write about it, but you can't just be like
we didn't have it up there.
We blogged about this 10 minutes ago, and now you blog about it. I'm like, we're busy like actually in the keynote right now.
Oh yeah, literally like before the keynote, loud music, yelling. I'm checking.
Well, so Gabe, you and I both, Gabe, you wrote a preview article for Search Virtual Desktop, and I wrote a preview article about Horizon Mobile stuff last week and this week.
Oh, right. So, yeah, I kind of set it up like wondering what was going to happen with Horizon Mobile in that, I believe, didn't I? And then you actually went down and talked to them and found out what was happening with Horizon Mobile.
Yeah, so I went down a couple of weeks ago and talked to Srinivas Krishnamurthy. I think that's his name. He's the guy that owns the whole everything mobile. And our conversation was just around Horizon Mobile itself. And after 4 years, it seems ready to go. And
have 4 years.
iOS.
Yeah.
Well,
ready's a relative term.
The great thing is that now it kind of solves some problems in some different ways that these problems didn't exist 4 years ago.
What do you mean?
So you hold on to a technology you know, for 4 years, and then maybe eventually a problem that it can solve comes around. And you know, but to be fair, I remember reading some things from 4 years ago that said, hey, this is, you know, we're going to be doing this mobile virtualization platform, but it's a couple of years away. So I guess this is a couple of years away.
Well, it seems, I mean, to be honest, Horizon Mobile does seem like a nice way to do things. Like having a personal VM and a work VM, it can combine the UIs together in a nice way. It fixes all the issues of, because, you know, it fixes the control issues of MDM. It fixes the fact that we can secure or remote wipe just the work side of things, and yet that can still work with all applications, not only certain applications from certain app stores or from, you know, that have certain SDKs or whatever. But it doesn't work on iOS. So
right, and I'll say let me back up a little bit. The problem that it does fix very well is that this, you know, the whole thing to make a mobile device secure when there are personal applications on there, you either need to police the personal applications to make sure that they're not getting into the work contacts or anything like that, and you use MDM and blacklisting and whitelisting to control the applications that way. Or your other alternative is to put your work email into a third-party client like Good or Enterproid or NitroDesk or
Citrix
or Citrix soon or anything like that. And the problem with that is that to get all of your other applications to interact with your now sandboxed email, you need to do app wrapping. But app wrapping, you know, you can't wrap all applications, or you need to develop stuff with SDKs and you need to develop new stuff. And so it's definitely it's possible, but it's very incomplete and difficult and can be kludgy. And so far, nobody seems to actually be completely doing it on scale, because these MAM products, most of them have come out in the last year or so. So the much easier way to do it, of course, is just put all your work stuff in a VM, and then you can use just the complete regular off-the-shelf applications. No app wrapping, no SDKs, no redeveloping, none of that crap. Just put it all in a VM together, and it's easy. But of course, no iOS. And also, who knows what the user experience and battery life is going to be like. And not only is there no iOS, but for Android, this is limited to devices that include the OEM integration kit or OEM enabler kit, I think he called. You know, it's you know, it is something that goes in the host OS level that you have to have in order to be able to run these Horizon Mobile virtual machines. But that's not all Android devices. So what I wrote in this article that came out today is that, okay, so you have your Android solution, and you're gonna have to build an MAM, you know, app wrapping or SDK or something based solution for iOS. You're gonna have to build it no matter what. But then what about that other category of Android devices that don't support Horizon Mobile? So are you gonna have to build all that mobile application management stuff for Android too? And, you know, by the time you're doing all that MAM stuff, are you gonna do Horizon Mobile virtualization for your Android devices and then the MAM stuff for your iOS devices? Or why don't you just do the MAM stuff for all your devices?
Yeah, I think you nailed it with that comment right there. That if Horizon Mobile only works for Android, and even the fact that it only works on some Androids, I'm okay with that, because as time moves on, more and more of them will have these capabilities and stuff like that. So, but if you're going to do Horizon Mobile only for Android, and then you have to have some other MAM solution for your iOS, but that other MAM solution, so now you're doing two solutions, but the other MAM solution probably has an Android solution too. Why am I not just using the other one and throwing away Horizon?
And, you know, maybe this could be great if, you know, there are certain companies in certain industries and, you know, that maybe they're just not ready to do, maybe they're just not ready to let personal devices hook into their email network. And these would be, you know, anybody that's still using BlackBerry today. And, or, that was a little harsh, but you guys
know
what
I mean.
It's
true. No, I know what you mean. But
so imagine, okay, well, we have this VM that we're in complete lockdown control of. Except, you know, hey, you get to have a Samsung Galaxy S3 or whatever it is instead of BlackBerry's hardware. Yeah. And then you have the personal side that has every single Android app that ever exists, as opposed to if you have a BlackBerry, you have I think there's a Facebook client and there's a Twitter client, but
there's not a Twitter client. There's a link to the Twitter webpage.
Oh, okay.
So that
could be a solid niche for Horizon Mobile.
Yeah, but then again, it goes back to I see what you're saying. Like it's not BYOD because it doesn't. It's only so limited, but it is. Yeah, if I want to give you a device, I may as well buy one of these Android ones. And for some of the users. You can if this is fine for you as a personal device, then you can use that also. But then, like, if you quit the company, you're giving back the device, so the whole wiping thing almost doesn't matter. And then it's like if I want to use an iPhone, then I'm gonna have a personal iPhone anyway, so I don't need the personal side of this Horizon Mobile. So that doesn't matter. So I feel like it's one of those things where you start with the full circle of okay, here's all the mobile device users, and you slice it smaller, slice it smaller, slice it smaller, slice it smaller, and now you've got this. Huge investment, huge new way of working, huge fundamental new thing, and it's working for like 4% of your users.
Right, but it's like it's like AppV, you know, versus like screw it, we're just going to deliver them a full VM with all of the regular applications, and we don't have to worry about packaging them or anything like that. You know, which way is easier?
Yeah. Well, and I guess I mean, you know, like I don't know. It's easy for me to cast stones from my non-ISV, non-vendor house, you know? So, of course, I mean, I don't want to... Like, here I am basically, like, saying, oh, this sucks because I can't use it everywhere. So if that was a world that... If it was my world where I couldn't bitch about anything, we'd still be using pagers with one way.
But if TechTarget came to us and said, okay, you know, screw iOS, you're not allowed to get work email on an iOS device... if you want to do work email and personal stuff on the same device, here's your Samsung Galaxy S3 or whatever, you know, their HTC phones or whatever, you know, it'd be something that's top of the line because
it has to be. So TechTarget wouldn't do it then.
Right. But if a hypothetical company that you worked for, handed you this as your solution and it's this, or something that's just completely locked down.
Well,
yeah,
I would
not
take,
so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, but then again, for iOS users, which frankly, the only reason I use iOS is because of iTunes, flat out. Because everything I ever bought, every movie, every video, every TV show is instantly and always available on my device. That is the one reason why. Which interestingly.
You're also invested in the apps and the platform, though, too. You know, you'd have to buy all that stuff again.
Yeah.
Granted, it's there, but you'd have to buy it all again.
But that's where it's interesting, though, because it is not a device. It's funny because like it goes back to the content thing and the Microsoft Store and all that sort of thing. Like, yeah, I'm locked into their content platform.
So to bring this back around to VMworld, you know, so it what I saw a couple weeks ago of Horizon Mobile, it looks slick and ready to go. It looks quite a bit different than the Horizon Mobile that I saw a year ago at VMworld, and the feeling seemed to be that we could see a public beta or something next week. But then, hey, we still need a solution for iOS. So, and you know, they've been showing everybody for the last 6 months or so these big tangled spaghetti slides, they called them, with a bunch of apps on one side and a bunch of devices on the other. So in order for that line to be drawn from native mobile apps to iPhones, that we're talking some type of mobile application management solution.
Well, and I believe that Vittorio acknowledged that they would need that. Like, that was something we said in a meeting, and Vittorio's like, obviously we're going there.
Yeah.
And the PR person's like, no, you can't say that. And Vittorio's like, come on, it's clear.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's been acknowledged in a way that we can say that, yeah. Yes, they recognize that they have to do some kind of mobile app management. Because right now, they have the bowl of spaghetti as the current drawing, and the after drawing shows Horizon App Manager, Horizon Mobile, and this huge white iPhone with four thick legs and a trunk. In the corner, you know, and that's their after slide. So we got to do something about that.
So we need that, and you know, part of a lot of MAM solutions, like I was talking about, is a sandbox email client. And, you know, they were saying maybe maybe a native mobile client would come out with Zimbra 9, but Zimbra 8 was only 6 weeks ago. But the it can just be a standalone
Zimbra
client.
Zimbra 9 might be okay.
It won't require... I don't think it'll require Zimbra server or anything.
It does, right. And the Zimbra is like that today. So I tried to use Zimbra before, although the version I used, I think, was 7. And at the time, you could not do a selective sync. It would only sync your entire mailbox. And I've got, you know, like 15 gigs of email from, you know, like the 1990s in my box. And it tried to put all that on my phone.
they said, like, basically with 9, including... you know, including the desktop client, which will be all HTML5, like 9 is going to be the Zimbra of the client. So it seems kind of soon for this VM world, but maybe in October.
And you will be there? Or...
I will not be there, actually.
You'll be in Synergy.
I will be at Synergy, so I'm sure we'll know somebody there.
All right, so...
Yeah, it'll be the same as last year. Hey, so we're kind of up against it, and I have a 130 thing, but... Did you see the article that Bridget posted today on Search Virtual Desktop?
I did not. How do you see those articles? Do you have is there an RSS?
I just happened upon this, actually. The article's title is Dell Gives VDI Partners Center Stage Downplays V Workspace. And it appears, according to this at least, that Dell is not going to emphasize V Workspace like we hoped they would. You know, we'd hoped that they would put the Dell marketing engine back behind them and start driving the technology, or start getting it out there and spreading the word a little bit more. And it appears the opposite is true, and they're going to protect their relationships, their partnerships with Citrix and VMware.
Hey, John Rolls, Absence needs a CTO.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's my tweet.
That would be disappointing if that's the case. But what exactly happens is a quote in there from Daniel Bolton, who we know from Bryform. He works for Kingston University in England, and he says, you know, hey, we're gonna throw up pilots to Zen Desktop now and Zenapp and see just in case, because if Quest is just gonna ride V Workspace into the sunset and wait until it's no longer financially viable, then we need to come up with something else. And I feel like that's probably what everybody's going to do now, which is too bad, because if they're going to kill it, they need to just let it go. But that's too bad. That is the exact opposite of what we'd hope they do.
All right. Tweet sent. I was definitely listening to everything you just said while I wrote that tweet.
That's all right. So we're all tired. But what I said was that this is the opposite.
All right. Well, hey, so that's it then. We'll wrap the show up. Thank you so much to all of you for enduring our comedic attempts at making all the SpringWorks over there produce audio online.
Yeah, and maybe the recording didn't work, and so you 20 people in the chat room are the only people that actually heard this show and will ever hear it.
Yeah, we've got two recorders, by the way. We've got software on the computer, and we've got a backup solid-state recorder. And they're definitely...
Also a hard lesson to learn.
Well, and they're both recording, but is that going to be a ghost tape or not? So we'll find out. Right. So hey, Gabe, you're out here this weekend. We will, all three of us together, as well as Justin, will be back next week, and we'll be running around VMworld. To all of you who are out there, you know, come by and say hi. Tech Target will have a booth. We'll have some VDI Delusion books in the booth that, if you haven't picked up your copy now, you can...
And we tend to make that booth our best or our base of operations. So, you know, if you swing by, you have a pretty good chance of running into us.
Yeah. So as the official media sponsor of VMworld 2012 San Francisco, you will find the Tech Target booth in Hall 47, Row 96, all the way in the back, not quite to the bathroom, but way behind the food carts by the pipe and drape where the spare boxes are. It's about the size of two phone booths pushed together. So look for that and look for us back there. And we will see you next week. At the Moscone
Center. Those are made up. I think those numbers are made up, but the directions are accurate.
All right, all.
All right.
Yeah, thank you so much. You're going to hear some dead air while we figure out how to turn this thing off.
No fade out music today.
Fade out music.
Please
goodbye.
Enjoy the
See you next
music.
Week.